Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We would like to greet our affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 of Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station bringing Mark Dankoff's America and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider audience in the American South through the means of conventional radio. We are also attempting to augment our conventional radio outreach by expanding on the World Wide Web, and we're just about finished, as I understand it, and having our archives restored. Show hosts will then be adding their descriptions and URLs to those archive shows so that browsers can look for the topics and guests that they either want to listen to again or will be listening to for the very first time. That's just around the corner. And we're still, of course, continuing to expand our outreach in international shortwave radio as well. We've been talking today to Phil Turney of the USS Liberty, who was among those who were attacked on June the 8th, 1967, by Israel, in what was clearly a premeditated attack. Those are not simply my words, but it's important to underscore as we talk to Phil Turney today in these next 2 hours about the incredible things that he endured on that morning and afternoon and evening, and the things that he's had to carry around with him for 40 years, along with the other members of that crew, that Dean Rusk, the former American Secretary of State, affirmed that the Israeli attack was deliberate and premeditated. So did Admiral Thomas Moore, later to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Admiral Moore insisted that this attack was deliberate and premeditated on the part of Israel, as all of the available evidence suggests from what these crew members have been sharing with us on this show. And there were three CIA reports, according to Eric Margolis, that deal with the USS Liberty attack. One of those three reports indicated that the CIA had concrete information that Moshe Dayan deliberately ordered the Israelis to attack the USS Liberty, but that's how high up this situation went in regard to Israel's premeditated attack that day. And, of course, to think that all of the crew members that I've had on the show thus far, Gary Brummett and Commander Dave Lewis, and now Phil Turney, all underscore through personal information that they accrued that day that the Secretary of Defense of the United States at that time, Robert McNamara, and Lyndon Johnson, the 36th President of the United States, among many other things, issued a deliberate stand-down order to fighter planes that had been scrambled by the USS Saratoga and the USS America that were designed to come to the rescue of the USS Liberty. This is an incredible story, and one that we're still trying to unpack in regard to not only what happened four decades ago, but what it means for today in regard to what many believe, and I'm one of them, is the ongoing control of American foreign policy in the Middle East on the part of the government of Israel and the Israeli lobby in the United States, and quite clearly what we've been talking about on this show in regard to the provable role of Jewish neoconservatives in urging the Bush administration and their supporters in Congress to attack Iraq, and now talk of attacking Iran. A lot of questions about whether or not this is truly in the national interest of the United States. Phil, we're going to have one more commercial break in about 3 minutes and then another longer period of time for conversation, but let's try to catch up with where we were when we broke away. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, we were washing the body parts off the deck, as I said before, and I might say at the time, well, I was a 20-year-old kid, but luckily, I was very well trained by the United States Navy. Thank God for that. But the disgust and the horror of treating human body parts that way in such a dishonorable fashion, and these were my shipmates, the guys that I served with, laughed with, drank a beer with, and went on the beach with, and it was something I'll never forget. and my good friend David Skolak, the young fireman that went up and was fixing the sound-powered phones, he was instantly blown to pieces by the aircraft. But the captain, those were his orders. He wanted no sign of any body parts, blood, or anything on the main deck. And so we began to wash it down as good as we could, and it was quite a task as the blood had dried, and it was very hard to get off. But with the salt water coming out of a 500 pound hose the size of a quarter, we managed to do the best we could. But anyway, my main crux was it was just a disgusting way to treat our American heroes, to wash their body parts and remains over the side of the ship. And that's something that I'm not happy to be part of, but I was. We got the ship as cleaned up as we could. On the horizon, as I said before, we could see ships coming to our aid. The USS Davis finally got there, pulled up alongside of us. We hooked up together, and the sailors started coming across to help us with damage control, getting the wounded off the ship and so forth. And I'll never forget that most of the crew that came aboard off the USS Davis were crying. They just couldn't believe what they saw. And it became more evident the more damage they saw and the more wounded that they evacuated. But I certainly thank those fellows off the USS Davis, USS Massey, and USS Saratoga for their much-needed help. It was a very welcome sight to see those great, big, beautiful American ships come to our aid, even though it was 18 hours later. I certainly don't blame those guys or the crew. It was our government's choice not to send the help. It certainly wasn't theirs. And they felt responsible that they didn't get a chance to come help us when they could have, especially the pilots off of both the America and the Saratoga. The evacuation lasted quite a long time, with helicopters taking the most seriously wounded off, medevacing them to the America where they could get more definitive care. Commander Lewis was one of those. Jim Ennis, who wrote the book Assault on the Liberty, was one of those. Many of them were seriously wounded. I myself was walking wounded. I had shrapnel, napalm burn, and other than that, I was in pretty good shape, thank God. But the evacuation continued. We got all the people off that needed to be off the ship, and the USS Davis kept four or five sailors aboard our ship with us as we began to do damage control to control the flooding and to put up shoring where the torpedo had hit. We had to shore each side of the bulkheads. They were in the shape of a balloon, and I'll never forget that there were cracks, some of them an inch, some of them 3 to 4 inches long, that the seawater was coming through the cracks, and it was almost like a lung breathing, just ready to burst. But we kept on putting the shoring up to keep the bulkheads from busting and sinking the ship. And we did that, and we had a 4-hour watch that stood by the bulkheads on either side. One person or two persons would watch for any further damage or leaks or whatever that we'd have to take care of. When that did occur, we did the best we could to take care of the problem. As far as we knew, we didn't know exactly where we were going. We thought we were going to Crete first, but then they diverted us to the small, tiny island of Malta. So there was another ship with us, following us on the way. That was a fleet tug that would pick up body parts, remains floating out of the hole, papers, things of this nature. And this went on until we reached Malta. And I believe that took five or six days. I forget. It's been so long ago. But it was quite some time. During the way to Malta, Admiral Isaac Kidd boarded our ship, and he began to interrogate the crew. I was interrogated in the sick bay with three or four other sailors. In depth, he wanted to know what we knew. He took off his stars, laid them on the table there, and said, "Listen, I'm just like one of you guys. Tell me exactly what you saw from the moment the aircraft started looking at you till the moment I'm talking to you right now." And we did. We opened up our hearts and our minds, and we gave them the best account of what we saw, what happened, what we did. The flag was flying. We tried to get out messages, so on and so forth. All of it. He put his stars back on, and he says, "Now I'm an admiral again, and I'm ordering you never, ever, ever breathe a word of this to anybody, not your mom, not your dad, not your sister, not your brother, not your crewmates, not anybody. If you do, you're going to go to prison or worse." And everybody knew what worse meant. At that point, I think I was the most frightened I'd ever been, even more frightened during the attack, is when that man came down on so hard on us. It was like we had done something wrong and that our government was mad at us. And we, at that point, I never did think or say anything about the Liberty until 20 years afterwards, until I read a story in the newspaper by Stan White, which is our current newsletter editor. Then I read Jim Ennis's book, Assault on the Liberty. Then I became, then I started to become involved in the USS Liberty Veterans Association. But anyway, we got into Malta. We got into dry dock. They drained the dry dock and got all the water out of the torpedoed spaces. And it was a terrible sight. I mean, it was just unbelievable the damage that torpedo had done, not only to the ship, but to the poor souls that were inside of there. They were most of them completely hairless, nothing on their body, no clothes, body parts. It was the smell of death. And I might mention all the way to Malta, it was the same way. It was just the smell of death all around you, fuel oil, and the smell of death. I'll never forget that smell as long as I live.
You know, one of the things, Phil, that comes to my mind in all of this is I simply try, as one who has never experienced anything like this, is I simply try to imagine the absolute visual and psychological horror of this for the people who were experiencing it, and you were 20 years old at the time, in regard to all of the things that you witnessed up to that point, in regard to the suffering, the horrific burns of some of these men, the lethal wounds, the blood, and so forth and so on. What was going through your mind at the time that, in the immediate aftermath of this, you had a United States admiral, in this case Isaac Kidd, that early in the game? You know, we're not talking about weeks or months later. We're talking about in the immediate aftermath of this horror, basically indicating to you guys, in no uncertain terms, that anybody who talked about this would get incarceration or worse, and that there was going to be a deliberate no-talk order on this whole thing that presumably must have reached all the way into the Oval Office based upon what we do know about this now. What, I mean, did this just blow your mind at the time?
Oh, absolutely. It just blew everybody's mind, and it put the fear of God in all of us. I mean, it was just unimaginable what had just happened to us, what we had been through. The USS Liberty was one of the most decorated ships in America's history. It's got more medals and awards than any ship that I know of since World War II. But it's right up there with the greatest ships that have ever floated on the high seas. But I must say that in Malta, we weren't allowed to wear our uniforms. We weren't even allowed to wear our uniforms, and we weren't allowed to own civilian clothes. So they got us civilian clothes. Some of us did have civilian clothes aboard ship. We did wear those. We weren't supposed to have them on there, but we did. You know how things work out. But they told us, do not wear your uniform when you go on the beach. Do not talk to anybody about this attack to anybody. If any reporters talk to you, do not try to do not give them any information. Do not talk to any of the locals. And again, even our own crewmates, the people that were aboard at the time of the attack, do not talk to them. And there was most of the guys that were on the ship were medevaced, and we were a skeleton crew, the ones that stayed aboard, which I did. I stayed aboard and brought the ship back. But there's many things that happened in between then, but yeah, it was horrific, and we were all silenced, and we didn't talk about it. At least I didn't. I just I couldn't, and I didn't even tell my parents about it. When I wrote a letter home, I didn't tell them exactly what happened. I just said that we got attacked, and I'm fine. Don't worry about it. And that was. That's the way it stood for, like I said, for approximately 20 years until I read an article, and then it just felt like my heart just opened up that I wasn't the only one holding this inside, that other people were talking about it. It was just a great relief for me to talk to the other crew members about it, because I hadn't talked to anybody about it for so many years. I had just tried to forget it, completely forget it. In fact, my second wife, she never knew a thing about it until about 3.5 years after we got married. And then she finally became involved in the USS Liberty, and she's still involved in it, as most spouses are.
And to me, the psychological and, for lack of a better term, spiritual horror of something like this, of a magnitude that someone like myself cannot possibly comprehend, because I've never been through anything this bad. As I think about this, it seems to me that it has to absolutely be compounded by the sense that one's own government is in this instance not perceived as the ally and friend and supporter that it should be, but is rightly perceived as being in an adversarial role to faithful American citizens and military servants who did their jobs that day to the best of their duty and discovered that the government that they counted on, the government that they trusted, the government that they believed would never let them down, had in fact not only done so, but was in the pursuit of an adversarial role vis-a-vis the victims on that ship. To me, any physical or psychological horror that would quite naturally accrue from this type of an experience anyway had to have been multiplied 10 or 50 or 100 or 1,000-fold by the fact that those that I suppose the military man is conditioned to trust the most, ended up being Judas goats, ended up being betrayers of these men who were defending the honor and the Constitution of the United States, presumably. We'll be back with Phil Turney of the USS Liberty. This is Mark Gancoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back. You can call Phil today at 1-800-313-9443. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F. 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Phil Turney of the USS Liberty, recounting his story of what happened in his own situation on June the 8th, 1967. I would urge all of our listeners, again, to turn to the USS Liberty Survivor site at ussliberty.org for a tremendous repository of information that will be both a poignant experience, I trust, as well as an infuriating one. It's poignant because you can't help but feel in your heart and mind a heart-wrenching, soul-wrenching sense of camaraderie with these great men who went through something that those of us who have never been called upon to suffer to that extent can only imagine in terms of what it did to these fellows and to their family members and loved ones. At the same time, you're quite likely to be infuriated, as I was, reading about the truth of what happened in June of 1967 as far as we presently know it. Just unbelievable that the government of Israel, could have gotten away with this, and that people in high places in the United States government in 1967, including Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara, could have perpetrated this type of a cover-up, which, as near as I can tell, continues to this day on the basis of some of the things that these various survivors have shared with me and have shared with others. Tune in Hesham Talawi's show tonight at currentissues.tv online. That's currentissues.tv. Listen to Ward Boston's account of this as the legal counsel to the U.S. Navy's Board of Inquiry for the USS Liberty. Watch for Mark Glenn's piece for the American Free Press on this subject, and I will keep pressing ahead in the days ahead to continue bringing some of these men on to tell their stories and to give us a bit of insight, not simply as to what happened 40 years ago, but also what continues to go on in regard to a foreign policy that, in my judgment, seems to be largely Israeli-driven. And I find myself wondering how many new tragedies there are going to be in regard to the lives of a new generation of Americans that will be ended or adversely affected by what is presently going on in Iraq and perhaps soon to be in Iran, in a circumstance that, in my judgment, does not necessarily involve the real national interests of the average American, but may be, in fact, driven by something else that the rest of us may find incredibly hard to comprehend. Rita in Texas, you're on the line for Phil Turney. Go ahead, Rita. You there?
Hello.
Hi, Rita. Go ahead.
Let me share with you. I kind of sympathize with your position until you got to the point, two points. One, obeying an order of throwing the parts of people's loved ones off the side of the ship. And the other one was when you agreed to be quiet. I'm a Christian lady, and I'm really very, very grateful that God did not open up a door for my three sons to serve in the United States military. At that time, I had a great respect for the military because my father was a survivor of World War II and served under Admiral Moore when he was a lieutenant in Chincoteague. And listening to you and the stories of the other men that served on the Liberty, I would not support one person who's in the United States military. There is lying by commission, that's telling an outright lie, and then there's lying by omission, failing to speak the truth when the truth should be told. I'm of the belief, after listening to you and listening to RBN and investigating, you know, their allegations concerning the Jews, that as long as we allow the Jews that are right now in power in Washington to continue to have power in this country, we're going to continue to have the carnages that you described. I remember reading that the man who was in charge of burning up all those people at Waco was General Richard Clark, who's a Jew. Tommy Franks is a Jew. I've been watching. People would get on and enter Lieutenant Watata on the Google. You'll be able to hear the testimony of the soldiers that are over there in Iraq and the atrocities that they're committing. And I want to ask you a question: If your commander had a baby that was there crying and put a pistol in your hand and commanded you to blow the brains out of that baby, would you follow the orders of that commander, sir?
Are you addressing that to me?
Yes, I am.
No, I would not.
Well, I'm of the belief that you should have said, no, I won't throw the remains of my fellow men over shipboard. I can understand a little bit about what you saw, because I'll never forget the name of Edward Edwin. He was a sailor. No, he wasn't a sailor. He was an army person who was in a rotating bed in Portsmouth Naval Hospital's tank hit a landmine. As far as I'm concerned, if you Liberty people want to have some... See, the other thing, too, is that wiping that blood off that deck, I imagine if you had some other fellow Americans that saw what the daggum Israelis did to our men, they would have gone after the daggum Israelis, which is what justice would have been happening. The United States Supreme Court, one time when it wasn't corrupt with the Jews, and Brandeis was the first Jew that was allowed in the daggum Supreme Court, he said the greatest tyranny a country can commit against its citizenry is to compel them to act contrary to their conscience. You're part of the government, sir. You were part of the government when you were in the military, and you're just as culpable as the ones that were in Washington, D.C.
Well, I think both Phil and I will address that when we come back. This is Mark Nankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on RBN. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team in their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com is a global opportunity.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
From San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Phil Turney of the USS Liberty, recounting his story as to what happened on June the 8th, 1967, to Phil, as well as to 296 other crew members, 34 of whom were killed, I understand, 171 of whom were wounded. And in the aftermath of that, these young men who survived that situation have been carrying these burdens for 40 years. And are now testifying to the rest of us as to what this has meant to them and to their family members and friends. And Phil, what's your response to this previous caller? Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to respond to her. And First of all, I would like to say to her that I served two tours of duty in Vietnam before I got aboard the USS Liberty, and I stayed in the Navy approximately 8 years, and I was very proud of my naval service, even though she thinks that what I did was a terrible wrong. I was only following a direct order that was given to me by a commanding officer. If I did not follow that direct order, I would have been thrown in the brig or overboard. Who knows? I don't understand her outrage at me only doing what I was told to do. And if you've ever been in the military, anybody that's been in the military understands that when you get a direct order, now there is orders that you can disobey. And the analogy of shooting a little baby is so over the line, it doesn't even come close to what we're trying to get to get out here. The USS Liberty veterans certainly don't support the government that protects butchers and murderers that will murder people on the high seas, especially Americans. And the butchers and murderers I'm talking about is the state of Israel. We certainly do not support that, and we certainly do not support a government that will continue to cover up for these butchers and murderers. No one should be allowed to get by with cold-blooded, premeditated murder, not even Israel. Now, that's my response to her.
Well, I think as well, I'd like to say something about this. I have never been in the United States military. Now, my father was a career Air Force officer. He was first in the Army Air Corps, left the football program at the University of Omaha a year early to sign up for the Army Air Corps the day after Pearl Harbor. The military then characterized his life for the next 32 years, both in the Army Air Corps and then subsequently in the United States Air Force. And then he was involved, of course, in the aerospace industry thereafter, both in Iran and Saudi Arabia, serving as a logistical advisor to the Shah's Air Force and then subsequently to the Saudi Arabian Air Force before he fully retired. And as I have tried to understand a little bit about military culture, growing up with it, even though I was not the one directly involved in it, as my father was, I nonetheless am looking at a book in my radio studio here in San Antonio entitled Military Brats. I think the book is probably out of print now, but Mary Edwards Wertsch, W-E-R-T-S-C-H, authored this book, I'm going to say about 15 years ago. At the time, it was on the New York Times bestseller list, and it goes into a very, very deep discussion of all of the intricacies of military culture as it relates to the command structure, as it relates to the ethos of the military that becomes all pervasive in the lives of those who grow up in it, either as ones who are direct participants or as those who are married to military personnel, those who are the offspring of military personnel and who travel around the world living under circumstances that have created, again, an entire culture that's somewhat unfathomable, somewhat impenetrable to those who have not directly experienced it over the long haul. And I guess what I'm trying to say to Rita is that there are many situations in which the men and women of our military are placed in circumstances where, on the one hand, they have been thoroughly conditioned in their training and in their discipline to obey and to trust their command and control structures, at the same time that they can be placed in circumstances that create moral tension and ambiguity and crisis that those of us on the outside of this find hard to imagine being placed in these kinds of situations. Phil, in your case, you were 20 years old at the time of the attack on the Liberty.
That's correct.
Well, I think when I was 20 years old, it's pretty embarrassing to admit this, but compared to your life at 20, Phil, mine was on Easy Street. I was in college. At that time, somebody else was paying the bill for me to be in school. And as long as I stayed out of jail and did my homework, you know, I was in a pretty good situation. I wasn't ever facing the kinds of life and death circumstances that you were at age 20. I never experienced anything at the age of 20, even remotely close to what you experienced on June the 8th, 1967, and in the aftermath of it. And when I tried to think of myself at 20, you know, the girlfriends I had, the classes I was going to, the peaceful existence that I had, I came from a stable family. I was healthy. I had no earth-shattering problems at that time. And when I think of the 20-year-old guy in the situation that you were in then and try to imagine what it would have been like for me, I suspect I would have been dealing with the same type of incredible psychological and personal dissonance that you were at that juncture. On the one hand, being totally faithful to everything that you had been taught to believe, totally faithful to everything that you had been trained to do, being totally respectful of the command and control structure that had been drilled in you since the first day that you stepped into the Navy. And then all of a sudden you're in a circumstance like this that you cannot possibly imagine, trying to survive and to cope with it at the same time that you're trying to be faithful to what you understood at the time was your calling, and to be faithful to your shipmates to the extent that you were following your calling and doing the best that you could do at that time as God saw fit to enable you to see the light. And that, so I guess what I'm trying to say is, for those of us who've never been involved in something that horrific, it becomes incredibly, to me, would be incredibly tortuous, incredibly ambiguous morally, to try and sort something like this out in a circumstance where you were a part of a system that always thought in more absolute moral absolutes, and that never led you to believe that there would ever be anything like this that you would ever face, where you would you know, question the authority and question the righteousness of the actions of your own government. And I guess what I would also say in this regard is that sometimes the perception of truth and the perception of the meaning of the things that have happened to us doesn't occur overnight, but it occurs over a period of years and in retrospect. It took you, what, 20 years after reading that article before you began to feel that maybe there was a different pathway that you were to travel on this thing?
Absolutely. It was a 20-year part of my life that I tried to forget and forget and forget. And I'm glad that part of my life is not with me anymore. I'm glad that this part is with me, where we can, the survivors, while we're still alive, can get the truth out. And someday, hopefully, with the good Lord's help, get this story out to the American people to let them know what exactly happened to us, and it can happen again. As it is, as you mentioned, in Iran and Iraq, what's going on. And I happen to have a son in the military right now. He's 19 years old. He's in Army Airborne, and he knows everything about the USS Liberty, and he knows about this government. But it was his choice. Daddy says, I want to serve my country. And I said, well, go then. And that's what he's doing. And to Rita, my son is putting his life on the line for you and your family every day, as I did, and past sailors, Marines, airmen, Army personnel did since this country's been around. And my father served in World War II. My father-in-law served in Korea. My uncle served in World War II, which he was captured, and he was a prisoner of war for 3 years, and on and on and on. My family has been a part of the military for over 100 years. But the people that don't realize, people don't go in the military just to kill people. They go in the military for a better life, for a better education, and some of them to go on and make a careers. But you do what you're told, and this is exactly what I did, and that's exactly what the rest of the crew did. They did what they were told, and if they wouldn't have, there's no telling what would have happened. And I can tell, you for sure. I know of several of my crewmates that have committed suicide over this, taken their own lives. I know one fellow by the name of Tom Riley, he was terribly wounded, and he ended up in jail in New Jersey. He didn't get his medication the way he was supposed to get it, and he died in a small cell in New Jersey because he didn't get his medication. So there's been a lot of heartache and tears over this, and there still is. But we're a group of men that are sticking together and are going to get this story out one way or the other till the last one of us takes our last breath. And I certainly appreciate you, Mark, and your program and your courage for giving us the opportunity to tell the truth to the American people.
Yeah, and I think that it as one who I guess was a part of the military subculture, and that I was the son of a career Air Force officer, I want to say that I have tremendous compassion, as God has led me in this direction, for people who have gone through so much more than I've ever gone through in life because of their involvement with the U.S. military. And to me, whether we're talking about the tragedy of the USS Liberty and the absolutely grim recognition that Israel has an outlandish control and influence of American foreign policy, that is a member of the old American right I am absolutely opposed to. I also think of the moral quandaries of the Vietnam War and the victimization of so many fine American servicemen and women through that tragedy. And you see the effects of that every day for those of you who are in the Washington, D.C. area when you go by the Vietnam Wall and see hundreds of people still trying to come to grips with the burdens that were inflicted upon them or a loved one in the wake of that mess. And now, of course, we're reliving this again in terms of a Middle Eastern war that Americans are on different sides of the aisle on in terms of whether or not we should be there, whether or not it is in our national interest. I guess I would say to Rita that I fully understand her frustration with the Jewish neoconservative control of American foreign policy. I don't like it either, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing this radio broadcast for RBN. And I think that as Americans, it is our right and our privilege and our duty to speak out on these things as God leads us. But I think at the same time, we need to speak out with love and with compassion, recognizing that there are Americans of goodwill who don't agree with us on this thing. We hope that we can convince them in the days ahead. But I think when it comes to the men and women of our armed forces, that we see them being placed in a situation of just terrible complication. Because on the one hand, many of them are there out of a sense of duty to serve. They've been raised that way. They've been taught to believe this. Many of them are there to create a better life for themselves. I saw an African-American Army sergeant packing up his car a few months ago at my apartment complex here in San Antonio. He was telling me that he was on his way to Iraq, and when we got into a conversation about how he had gotten involved with the Army to begin with, for him it was the way to a better life and to get a better education, and he had a sense that he wanted to serve his country. Is he ultimately doing the right thing in what he's presently involved with? People of goodwill can and will disagree on this, but I think we can disagree on this without impugning the motives of those who are on different sides of the aisle on this. There are plenty of people who are engaged in heart-wrenching debate over all of this and who may be diametrically opposed to one another in regard to the ultimate conclusions that they draw. But that is not to say that they are necessarily people of ill will or should have ill will toward one another. And I guess that this is part of the pain of this whole thing, Phil, because you guys in the last 40 years have been doing, I would imagine, a couple of things. You're collectively trying, as a part of what St. Paul used to call the community of suffering, trying to come to grips with what you've been through and to support one another, those of you who went through it directly, and to support your family members and friends who've been trying to support you. And at the same time, it seems to me that 40 years later, you guys may have a broader mission, which is to warn the rest of us in the American public about what you think is happening again, and to try and use the remaining days of your lives to the extent that God gives you the ability and the grace to keep this from happening again. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct. I believe that wholeheartedly. In fact, I believe that on June the 8th, the only help we had was the hand of God. He's the one that held that ship up with that big torpedo hole in there, approximately 40 by 40, 39 by 40 feet, and all the damage that was done to it and the lives that were taken. I think he kept us alive to bring this story out, to show the world, to show the American people the type of people that we're dealing with, not just then, but right now.
Yes. We'll be back with Phil Turney of the USS Liberty. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, in the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll take another caller when we come back. Stay tuned.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Thank you.
and Fox America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're talking today with Phil Turney of the USS Liberty. You can find the USS Liberty Survivor site at ussliberty.org. And again, I would urge listeners who have not done so already to check out Eric Margolis' piece on the USS Liberty that was posted in the Toronto Sun in May of 2001. Also, Jim Ennis' piece for the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs that came out in June of 1993 is well worth our time, too, as far as understanding some of the basic facts as we presently know them in regard to the chronology of the attack and specifically some of the things that have transpired as we try to unravel the political meaning of that event of that day and as it continues to impact our lives now. Jim in Texas, you're on the line for Phil Turney. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I'd like to say something to Rita from Texas. I served in the military for 3 years prior to when this happened on the Liberty, but there was no dishonor at all among the crew, officers, and men on the Liberty. They were following orders. They were doing, as a matter of fact, they performed above and beyond the call of duty. The dishonor starts with Admiral Kidd on up. That's where the dishonor is. I discussed this with you before, Mark. I think when the other guy was on, the lieutenant commander.
Yes, Commander Lewis.
Yeah.
Yes.
We discussed more or less the same thing, but the dishonor is among the high brass of the Navy, and your guest was an enlisted man, I guess, because he said he was a petty officer, third class, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, and people that haven't been in the military, especially they haven't been enlisted military, don't understand how the situation works. Enlisted military has very little to no choice of following orders, especially if you're given a direct order. But there is ways of appeal. You can go in the Army, at least. You can go to your inspector general. I know the Navy has something similar to that, which is outside the chain of command. You can go to the inspector general if you feel you've been given an order that's unlawful. You can go to the inspector general, and he's supposed to investigate. And I believe the Navy has, I know they have something similar because all the military does.
Yes, and, you know, it seems to me, Jim, when I look at the this whole issue of the command and control structure of the military and this whole business of chains of command, I think you've, you know, said a couple of things that are well worth repeating here. One is that in the case of the Liberty, and I would argue in the case of most of what went on during the Vietnam War, that to the extent that there was military culpability for what happened in these tragedies, we're talking about people of very high rank, leading directly into the top civilian command and control structure, both at the Department of Defense as well as in the Oval Office, that both in the USS Liberty crisis as well as during the Vietnam War, the junior officers and the enlisted men were simply carrying out their duty as they were trained to see that duty, and in circumstances where the entire educational system that they had been a part of was encouraging them to carry on with exactly what they carried on with. We'll be back, Jim. Hang on the line. We'll
sure.
Another caller when we come back. It's Mark Dantos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on RBN. Stay tuned. Our guest today is Phil Turney of the USS Liberty.